Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Haddit.com Radio Show. Haddit.com Radio is an in-depth look at all things VA. If you need help with the VA, log on to Haddit.com. Now, here's your host, Gerald Cook.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, on this 16th day of November 2017. We're here with our co-host, Jay Basser. And today our guest speaker is Berta Simmons. And I would hope you all listen up and pay attention and get your pen and pencils ready because we're going to be giving out a lot of good information. And should you have a question or a comment, please feel free to call in. Our number is 347-237-4819. Now, our call-in number, once again, is 347-237-4819. And just hit the number one when you're prompted to, and you'll be able to come in the queue here, and we'll try to pick you up. Berta, how are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good, Gerald. We had a beautiful fall here in New York where I live, but it has turned into winter this week, that's for sure. So we've had wind, hail, rain, and snow today, but nothing's hanging around.
My.
But
keep that in New York.
Yeah, but, you know, I came from a southern state. I used to live in New Jersey. That was like a southern state when I came to New York because it is cold up here. But I like it. I like the change of the season. And I hope people, you know, that are listening in do take advantage to call in, you know. And if we can't answer their question during the show, and if they come to Haddit, I bet they'll find the answer right there because there's a lot of information in our DIC forum on the same subject we're talking about. But like you say, Gerald, you know, it pays to repeat these things.
It does.
You know, and I've done...
Because we have new members and we have new people coming through to
all
the website
time.
Listening. Yes.
Yeah. But,
and it's a serious topic.
Well,
it's something you can't turn your back on. You please pay attention and call in or, you know,
yeah.
At least take notes and remember this is in the archive, so if you need to go back
yep.
and re-listen to it, you can.
Yep. And the thing is, Gerald, none of us ever know what our expiration date will be.
No, we don't.
You know what I mean? And that's why it's important, too. And if we're VA claimants, we've got to stay as healthy as we can in spite of our disabilities to make sure that we can live long enough to maybe see the benefit of having an award letter, you know, in our lifetime. And a lot of the things that I think about, and I've written quite a few things down that probably I've said before many times on the website, but then again, I lost two good men, two disabled vets, two honorables each, so I really learned from both of those experiences, particularly the last time when I really had to do a lot of dealing with the VA. So I don't really give anybody advice unless it's something that it's a regulation or that I experienced personally. And you know, we've talked before about having a death file, Gerald, and I think it's so important, and it can make things a little bit easier for any veterans survivors.
Yes.
You know, it could make it things a lot easier. Actually, I've got one myself, and of course I'm a civilian, but there's a lot there in it that my daughter well, both my kids, but my daughter will probably really have to, she'll know what to do, you know, with that death file. It's funny, but I think about it quite often. What else, what other information do I have to put there? And, should I go over the death file at this point, Gerald?
Wait a minute, Berta. I think we have a caller.
Oh, okay.
512. I might remember. Is that you, Ray?
No,
hello?
I'm just listening.
Oh,
I'm just listening to the podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome aboard. If you have a question or something, just jump in there.
Okay, thank you.
No, you're welcome. Go ahead, Berta.
Okay.
We can get into this. I mean, it's quite involved, really. I mean,
yeah.
You can start off simple and make it as complex as you want, but...
Well, that's it, Gerald.
There's some mandatory things that must be there, and that's what you want to concentrate on first.
Yeah, and I think one of the most important things, if a person has a death file, it could be an ordinary manila envelope, but to mark it in such a way that it'll trigger the spouse to know where it's at when the spouse he or she needs it. And... the first thing they should do is put Haddad's our website right on the cover, and probably even put the password that the veteran uses, because the spouse could come through that password on the website. And I think that's going to be one of the most important things, in my opinion, that any survivor at this point is going to need to have, because they might get stuck like I did with two veterans representatives, one with each husband that I lost, who did not really have a clue on DIC. And the reason is that they really don't get a lot of DIC claims compared to veterans claims. It's probably a minimal amount at the end of the year when they check all the records. But on the other hand, they were trained in DIC just like I was. So they should be able to properly help a widow or widower, a survivor of a veteran. But to tell you the truth, Gerald, I think the most important thing any family member could do, widow or widower, and that covers any same-sex legal marriages in the state that you're married in. If your marriage is legal, it's going to be the same, you know, for a same-sex widow or widower. And I think it's very important, you know, to mention that. The file should, this is what somebody told me about life insurance policies. My insurance man told me years ago, never put it in a cash deposit bank at a bank. I mean, I'm saying it wrong. A deposit box at a bank. He said never put life insurance policies in there, because I guess some banks, when they can freeze assets, they can freeze that box, the deposit box.
Yes, they can.
And now, I don't know if that is the case everywhere, but then again, a person really doesn't need to put their insurance policy anywhere like that. They should put it right in their death file, and that would regard even servicemen's life insurance through the VA, whatever they have, and maybe attach a little note to it saying that whatever the proceeds are from that policy, to have a little bit of a note there telling the spouse, at the time of my death, you might have to get an independent medical opinion, and it might cost money, so please hold on to some of this. Don't spend it all in one place, you know. But
that's right. Bernie,
yeah.
Didn't we find out down in Arkansas they wanted over $3,000 for a... autopsy or something like that?
Well, gee, that is terrible. And, Gerald, years ago, I had no idea how expensive autopsies are. And that's why I was telling people to become organ donors, because it in most cases, they will have to give you an autopsy. And here in the state of New York, that autopsy didn't cost me a dime. But but it's so odd when the organ bank called me and I said, oh, yes, my husband's an organ donor. It never hit me. And that was the day after he died, they called me. It never hit me how important that autopsy would be to my claim. I was just, you just don't think of these things. But the only time I think that any survivor would have to make that type of an investment, which is a terrible amount of money, is if they question the cause and contributing factor of death on the death certificate, and which it might be correct. That's a bad part. But what I found out years later, my husband's autopsy is what service-connected many of his disabilities, particularly the diabetes mellitus and his heart disease, from Agent Orange heart disease. And it confirmed.
So in your case, Berta, you would have had you might not even been able to secure his rightful benefits had it not been for the autopsy.
That's absolutely right, Gerald. You're absolutely right. I mean, I have denials for my DIC that are outrageous. They'll use anything. They will stoop as low as they can go. But on the other hand, they were giving me a hard time because I had filed for a wrongful death, that type of a case. So I keep thinking, well, that's why they were so reluctant. But I mean, it didn't help them to be so antagonistic. And actually, the secretary of the VA, about 10 days ago, said, I don't know where it was quoted, maybe it's Stars and Stripes magazine, I forget where he said that he did find that the VA system was definitely geared sometimes to discourage and go against the veteran. I forget the word he used. John, do you remember what he said? He said
VA
it was an
adversarial.
Huh? Arbitrary.
VA was adversarial.
Yeah. Adversarial. That's it. Adversarial. Yeah. And that is the first time I've ever heard a VA secretary ever say that about the VA. But he's finding out the nitty-gritty. And it's true. I mean, this is why T-Bird started this site. She knew in her own experience what a rigmarole the VA was, and that was years ago. That was over two decades ago. It'll be 21 years for Haddit in January. So she already knew, and in 20 years, all of the veterans and survivors that have come to our site, I would say 80 to 90% of them have found the VA to be adversarial at some point. And some of them, they go right through the system and everything's a piece of cake. But on the other hand, a lot of disabilities are difficult for the VA to, to tell you the truth, I think the biggest problem of all is the CMP setup. And the fact that federal contractors were found to be ripping off the VA for about $89 million. I don't know if anybody read that news.
I think they're going to continue using outside contractors.
Yeah, but it seems to
help them cover things up. I don't know.
Well, in one sense it does, because maybe it's going to put the screws to the choice program, because that's where they were, the outside contracting physicians or whoever they were. They're the ones who are overbilling the VA under the CHOICE program, and I can hardly believe it. I read it yesterday, $89 million. I've got to really check what I've read, because I don't know, maybe I have that figure wrong. It seemed horrific when you think of all the veterans that have been waiting, in some cases, for years for the proper consultation, and here the VA is giving these dopes $89 million. I could be wrong on it. I think it was $89 million, and I read it fast yesterday.
Yeah, you read it right. Most cases they were saying they were double billing, and a lot of these doctors' offices, they double bill.
Double bill.
And even the insurance companies are set up to actually stop that or to find it and catch it. So
yeah.
They know if a doctor's double billing and they trash the other bill. But the VA must not be set up that way because they're probably paying both bills. And then when they catch it, it's kind of too late.
Yeah, yeah. Boy. Yeah. I mean, when I think of the money that the VA squanders on stuff, it's absolutely pathetic. And it's enough to make anybody angry and wondering why they are overspending in so many areas and underspending when it comes to compensation, because, you know, they'll lowball anybody. And when I first came to Haddon, yeah, I wasn't used to really hearing that term in terms of a disability, but I think all of us know what that means. You know, I mean, they lowballed my neighbor. He's getting 10%. He should be getting 100%. Every time I call him, they lowballed him. He looks at me with,
we know
that, you know, he thinks I'm talking about his physical attributes. But I'm not. But to get back to the death file, and I'll put all of this stuff, in, I think I've got a lot of this at Haddon already, but I'll put this again at Haddon probably by tomorrow. Of course, in that death file, there should be your DD-214 and your DD-215, if applicable. They should always go together. The most recent award letter the veteran has from the VA, and I'm assuming they already have probably 3 or 4 plastic totes full of manila folders on all of their other VA stuff, and I just hope it's in order. But I put down their last, award, most recent award letter, or even if it's a denial letter, at least with that letter there'll be some rating, and it will give the wife or husband some idea of where they stand in that respect. And then they'll have the C-file number. They'll need it. I mean, a C-file number is something I never thought I'd have a C-file number. I found out that I did get one when I reopened my husband's pending claims after he died. And but I knew what the number would be because I heard him rattle it off so many times to the 800 number. You know, but Peggy, you know, like that did a lot of good. But another thing in there should be probably a raised seal copy of a marriage license. Now, maybe VA would accept a copy, and they probably already have it. If you're a disabled vet and you're getting VA compensation or a VA pension or something, they probably have a couple things that you're going to probably have to send them again. So just in case, and any prior divorce papers, that should be in the file. The birth certificates for any minor children. And when I say minor children, the VA considers natural children, stepchildren, or adopted children. So that's important for people to know that, too. And most of our vets know that.
Yeah, and they have to have their birth certificates, too.
I forgot to say that. Gee, I'm sorry. But you're right, their birth certificates. You know, and maybe the VA has already paid the veteran in their lifetime a dependency allowance for the wife or husband and the kids. But still, they're going to might have to send it again to the VA. There's a good chance they might ask again. And a blank 21-534. And we have a copy of the blank and had it. And that's the DIC application that I would advise any spouse, a surviving spouse, to really go over it very carefully before they file it online. You know, there's nothing wrong with filing it and taking your time with it and mailing it to them and getting a proof of mailing. But I don't think it's changed much, John and Gerald, since I filed mine. But there's a lot to it. You know, And when you're in stress and you're in grief, you know, it's easy to forget something that might be important on that. My DIC form covered DIC under two theories, direct service connection and 1151, and it also covered my accrued benefits under my husband's pending claims. So I'm pretty sure that that part of the form has not changed, where you have a chance to say that you are claiming accrued benefits too. But there's a little bit more to accrued than that. But that, and if a survivor does that within the first year after death, they are protecting their earliest effective date for any potential DIC that would be retroactive to the date of their spouse. And they're also protecting their status for accrued benefits, which are based on claims that were pending when the veteran died. And it's very important because that, too, I mean, they will not accept a claim for accrued benefits after 1 year has passed after the veteran's death. Of course, they'll take a claim and then they'll send you a denial very quickly, unless it is a NEMR claim, Agent Orange claim. So, the funny thing is, that first year after death, in some respects, it goes very slowly because everything in your life has changed. But on the other hand, important things sometimes are things that you don't want to think about. And you know, it's easy to put off these things.
Well, it's important that within that first year is do what you're supposed to do. Take care of business, and that comes first.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot to do.
You have to get this data in because the VA is extremely strict.
Yeah, they are, Gerald.
Totally unforgiving.
Sure, we have another caller.
Oh, yeah. Caller, you in there? Let's see.
Yes.
5-1. Oh, hello?
Yes, I'm here, and I'm listening and learning. I have
no questions or
comments at the time. I'm listening and learning.
Okay.
No, for my wife.
Oh, well, good.
Welcome aboard. Yeah,
thank
if you have a question or comment, just jump in there. We'll get her answered for you.
Roger that.
Okay.
Go ahead,
Berta.
That's great, Carol, because, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about these things, but I have found throughout the years that our nation's veterans are more willing to think about these things than the average civilian family. And if they're a disabled veteran and it's a question of any sort of death benefit for their wife and or their children, I mean, they are really willing to think in terms of the future in a very realistic way. And I appreciate that because I wanted to do a death file presentation at my church, but nobody really seemed, I'm in the senior ministry and all the other senior people, they just didn't seem to want to think about it, you know, and I can understand that. But I'm glad that we have the opportunity. Here's something else that's very important. The death file should contain a copy of your health care proxy and DNR. If you have one, it should be in there. And, of course, I think the VA would require that, too. I don't know. John, would you know? John?
We want copies of everything.
Yeah. I think Medicare requires a copy of it now because I had to give a copy to my regular doctor, but I'm not a veteran. But I would think, you know, about 2 weeks ago, a nurse told another nurse who had probably just got onto the shift, that patient's in bad shape or whatever it was, and that there was a DNR in the file. There was no DNR. The patient died.
He had a heart surgery.
Oh, is that what it was from? And he could have been resuscitated.
Yeah,
but
that's
here,
right.
The way I read the story, some nurse told another nurse there was a DNR in the files, do not resuscitate. And when the guy, started having problems, they did not resuscitate him. And, that's
a
terrible
thing.
Huh?
They paid a big, reports had they paid a big settlement out of that. Millions of dollars.
I would hope so. Yeah, I mean, gee, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. Of course, if you have a will, it should be a copy with your lawyer and a copy in your death file. And for any Vietnam veteran who might not have a spouse, or even for a Vietnam veteran who does have a spouse, but it could also be elderly at this point, you might as well put the contact information for your next of kin in that file in the event that even if you don't have an Agent Orange presumptive now, we never know what will change down the road. So, and NEMR, under the NEMR court order, they have to pay out the money if there's any retroactive money, and they would have to pay to, the adult children, I don't think they go any further than that, but they do have to pay that to somebody if the surviving spouse is also deceased.
Now, Bertha, on this, this is kind of off topic a little, but on this NEMR, does that only apply to Vietnam veterans, or does it apply to a veteran that was exposed to Agent Orange, for instance, stateside, because we're getting veterans now that's been able to prove up Agent Orange exposure to in stateside. Wouldn't that still NEMR apply to those?
NEMR only covers in-country Vietnam vets, Gerald. And this question came up before a few times. As a matter of fact, Kurt Priestman asked me the same question.
Because he thought
that, now, when they service-connected him for Agent Orange exposure in Thailand, he raised that question to me. Why wasn't it done in his mind? They didn't give him the right retroactive money or whatever. But NEMR is specifically for in-country Vietnam vets. And they've never changed that. And, so it narrows it down a lot. But still.
Yes, it does.
Let's give them a little background on NEMR real quick to kind of catch people up that's listening. There was a court case, and this veteran's wife, her name is Beverly NEMR, and she took the VA to court over her husband's Agent Orange issues, and she knocked the ball out of the ballpark and won the whole kit and caboodle. So it was a precedent-setting case, so that's why they talk about NEMR. So in all Vietnam, in-country veterans are NEMR class members.
That's right. That was a class action lawsuit.
Yeah, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. And it's also a good thing, too, John, where a lot of Navy veterans, if they can prove that they stepped on Vietnamese soil for any reason at all, with mail or delivery or picking up somebody wandering to the ship, they come under NEMR, which is a good thing.
Yeah, a lot of them do.
But
with the ships list and stuff they've added lately, there's been a lot more veterans now will take advantage of that, that were actually through boots, but still, they still drank the water, and that's what
served
them.
You're right. Yeah, that's a really rough situation. The Da Nang Harbor situation, to me, I think is outrageous. How they can say that a ship that was in the harbor of Da Nang, with all the waterways in Vietnam running, from north to south, from gravity, they're all running into the Da Nang Harbor, and all that water was coming up through, all the villages and forests and everything that was sprayed with Agent Orange, how they can say that Da Nang, the water in Da Nang Harbor was not thoroughly contaminated, it's absolutely an outrage. you know. But Dang Harbor Vets have a heck of a time, and maybe someday it'll change. But, you know, the enemy, our enemy is not the VA. It's time. I mean, time is the enemy for these Vietnam vets for sure. You know, I mean,
yep.
I just can't believe how many are dying, you know, from Agent Orange.
Yeah, look at this way, Bert. The VA has all the time in the world, but the veteran doesn't.
Yeah, oh yeah. And the longer they stave off stuff, to me, a lot of it's job security. You know, if they granted just about every claim at a regional office level, there wouldn't be this accumulation of this constant, you know, redo of claims and stuff like that. I mean, to me, it's job security, or they're just basically incompetent. I just can't pick. Well, it's a lack of a lack of momentum to do anything about those employees that really do not do their job. The accountability.
Well,
and I think VA is trying to change it, but they've got a long way to go, John, you know.
It's a racetrack, Berta. The car goes around the track. He stops in the pits. The driver jumps out. The other jumps back on the car and takes off again.
Yeah.
It's not new money.
Yeah.
It's not new money.
Yeah.
There's some new money, but it, you know, it's not new money. So
boy,
it's just it, you know, that's. But they're treating it like new money, and it's not. Because when a veteran passes away, they might pay $1,200 DIC. If he's drawing $3,000 a month, the rest of the money goes back in into the pot.
Yeah.
So.
Boy, it's just infuriating to me. But
I've had to explain that to a lot of people.
Yeah,
including
yeah.
congressmen.
Boy. Also, any Social Security papers, you know, like the little award letter you get from Social Security, that should be in that death file too. And if you want to be an organ donor, make sure your spouse knows that. And if it's not on your license, just write a little note in there or tell your main doctor. Because as disabled as my husband was, they were happy to get what they got from him as far as harvesting things that they could use. Even though his heart was shot, his brain was shot, you know, there's still a lot left that they could use. And there's a lot of peace of mind in knowing that, you know, for me, the way he died. And
how about the diabetes, Berta?
How does that affect Rod's
organs?
Say that. How does that affect
Rod? The diabetes. How did that affect his organs?
Oh,
because I knew your battle was over his diabetes.
Well, that's a good question.
He didn't have it, but he did.
Yeah, he was untreated and undiagnosed for both Agent Orange heart disease and Agent Orange diabetes. In the 6 years he was a patient here, because these things didn't show up in Newark, VA, they had plenty of opportunities to actually diagnose him with these two conditions, and they chose not to. And I proved that he had both of them. But, you know, one piece of my evidence, this might sound odd, for the diabetes mellitus, was his driver's license. Another piece of evidence, well, there were a lot of things there, but it gets back to the autopsy, John. I studied a 6-page autopsy that they did, the medical examiner did. I studied it intently. They had a toxicology report. That's what often makes these things take a long time. The only meds in his system were was his high blood pressure meds and the Sudafed medication that VA gave him for 6 years. And he had no reason to be taking it. So that contributed to his death. But there was one word in the heart slides. And all of this stuff, I mean, my daughter bought me a book that cost $300. She gave it to me for Christmas one year on cardiology, Brunewald's cardiology, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these things I was not familiar with, all the terms. And but yet, there was one word in the autopsy in his heart slides, and I forget what it was, that I never looked up medically. And if I had looked up that word medically, it was the word that indicated he had diabetic cardiomegalia. So if I had known what that one word said in the autopsy, you know, and I knew what everything else said, it might have made that claim go a little bit faster. But as it was, I had already fought them for malpractice, and I won. And that was in 1998. Oh, and I never went to court over that. I settled with general counsel. I settled my own case out of court. I didn't want to go to court. I didn't see the need for it. I was happy with that settlement because, you know what, they could have given me trillions of dollars. It would not have made me happy. There's nothing in the world that could bring my husband back. So, so I settled with them. And a good lawyer often tells their clients, settle out of court if you can. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. But to make a long story short, when I filed the diabetes claim, this time I was really smart. I did not have a lawyer or an independent medical opinion for my wrongful death claim. So I had to get up to speed on the legal end and the